got that other song ready to go if we do. Let's put that back.
Yes, sir. Let me dig into your brain. Folks falling like rain. Property got me selling things. Guess I'm gonna explain. Jane is rolled up, no gangs beats rolled up. Jane is rolled up, no gangs beats rolled up.
But there's only so much time left in this crazy world. I'm just crumbling. I'm just crumbling.
Boom. What's up? Welcome all the cannabis listeners, growers, my stiletto stoners, my cannabis conrad, conscious conrads, salute. Herbbox is here to bring you another. But, you know, it's winding down time, man. November the 8th, it's a lot of things going down, a lot of things going to be voted on as people. We got the state of Arizona, Massachusetts, Maine, California. Now, three of those four states, blue states, California, Massachusetts, Maine leans to be a blue state. Arizona is still in the red. So, we'll see. Out of those states, you got a heavy drug use of heroin, pills, Maine and Massachusetts. So let's see if it'll turn things around, maybe, and you know, get things popping on a good note. And now we'll see. The governor of Maine, it's because of us, he said, the blacks coming up from New York, bringing the heroin and the PLZ. Okay. We blame for that. Any person with any sense that was selling drugs, why would he go up to Maine from New York? I could tell you two reasons off the top why he would. One, you're going to stick out like a sore thumb because ain't no black people in Maine. Number two reason, the population of New York, just the city, is more than the population of the whole state of Maine. And the numbers of people who are using heroin in the state of Maine ain't worth the motherfucking effort gas to be going up there. So, the governor of Maine, fuck you. Straight up and down. And I'm also pissed. Now, for everybody, you know, seeing all the cannabis people, you know, doing their pom-poms for, you know, cannabis to be, you know, passed and, you know, uplift prohibition. And, we can play, you know, Bob Marley songs, and you can, you know, some of you wear the dreads, but this is going on. What, you know, we've been telling y'all is help us. When I say help us, I mean, yo, help us, man. They're killing us. There's been another shooting, just as well as you can, you know what I'm saying. Do it for cannabis, and you can preach, you can get on your soap box, and you know, I don't know what else we gonna do. What else can we do? We've tried protesting, marching, speaking to you. You tell us, what exactly do you want us to do? If we have our hands up, we've told you we have a gun, and we don't mean no problem. We have our gun license. Let me get it. We still get shot. What can we do? Now, I don't mean to bring this up on the cannabis show, because, but I just can't sit back and have everybody be, hey, let's legalize marijuana. And you could be so strong about this plant, so got so much to say, and you say it's so unjust, but it's unjust sitting right here. But it's maybe because I'm gonna, you know what? Hey, I'll play the song. Play the song. And did you give me the answer? That's all we want to know is the answer. But, you know, you say this plant is the healing of the nations. And I'm gonna try to do my best to try to heal and reach out to some of the other comrades across, this United States. And we're going to see if it's the healing plan. So I'm going to start reaching out to a lot of other shows, man. And maybe let's try it this way. What you think? Yeah.
As far as reaching out and sharing?
I mean, yeah. Saying, shit, you know what I'm saying? Like, okay, if anybody's going to be open-minded to having an opening discussion and really getting some thought behind it, it's got to be the cannabis community, right?
Liberal, I mean, it's open.
You listen to hip hop, majority reggae. You probably have Bob Marley poster somewhere. You about peace and love, you know what I mean? So let's call for some peace and show some love, right? You know, I mean, I'm gonna see what I can do. That's gonna be my protest, is to ask and reach over the table with an extended hand, saying, brother, my white brother, my Latin brother, my Asian brother, who needs some help. And ain't nothing wrong with asking for some help. Speaking of the Asian, we're doing our other end of the show segment, you know what I'm saying? We're doing cannabis and culture and cannabis, meaning we're trying to find out the history of cannabis in all the cultures, all right? You know what I mean? As we did last week, Native, we're going to revisit that because it was so deep. Before they even got in it, to it, it went right into how they was just stripped of their whole land and everything. So I was like, yeah. So I tried to do a little narrative. This part, America had its hand in their bullshit too over there in Japan. We're going to do Japan first as one of the Asians, and then we'll get to the others and whatnot. So that'll be that. And so a little bit of that there. And a little bit of news we're going to do with the show. Man, so just on a lighter note, take it back. You know, light yourself something up or roll something. You know, see how it go. So I don't want to be too heavy started out the show, but I didn't want, it was something I had to get up and get off my chest. But, hey, man, speaking of getting things off your chest and easing up, man, there's two shows that's out there now, that's about cannabis. One is called High Maintenance. It's like, it's on Vimeo videos, and then there's one Netflix has called Dejointed. It's about marijuana, too. You know what I'm saying? So, Weeds kicked it off. The show Weeds had kicked it off real good, you know? Did you ever watch that show?
Yeah, with Mary Louise Parker, yeah.
Weeds kicked it off real good. And you know what, man? She a hell of an actor because I heard an interview and she was nothing like the character. I was like, damn, she sold the shit out of me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I was really feeling the way she was, her skills as an actress. Yeah. That's good, you know what I'm saying, to take you there to that spot. So, anyway, what else we got in the news, man?
I tell if your weed gone bad.
Oh, yeah.
I'm quite sure
you know it's gone bad if it's dry and disgusting.
Well, some of the things the article brought out, if it was dry, is one of the things. Mm-hmm. If it didn't have a smell, because it was also saying that wherever you store it at, it's gonna take on that smell.
Ah, storage.
So, storage is very important. If you store,
so why don't you have an herb box? And you know, we won't get bad because inside the box we also have a glass jar that comes with the box. So there's no problem.
It's at herbboxx.com.
It's no need. Christmas time coming up. Tell Santa Claus, put it on the list. Because he knows when you've been bad or good, so be good, for goodness sakes. What else it say?
Oh, yeah. It said tell him about the smell of your weed, also from where you stored it at. Also, the sound. They said mature, ripened weed should have a audible snapping sound if it's pretty good. But if it's not that good, it may not have a sound or sound damp, meaning it's too wet, or maybe it was being stored in a moist environment. And also, if it has mildew on it, it's a white, powdery substance. That would be a bad batch, just put it that way.
A lot of growers can grow. The main thing to stop, of course, stay in the preventive mode. There's a lot of things you could do, and they have some stuff. But once you get in the flower, when you get that powdery mildew, I mean, it's kind of hard. You want to stay in preventive mode. There's a organic line of Pure Plus, ALLPERPLUS. It's supposed to be really good. Saying preventative, it is all organic. All right, so you definitely want to stay that. And another thing is your temperature. So in the daytime, you're running those hot lights, you know what I'm saying, in the house. Hopefully you got a fan that's pulling some cold air from out of your tent. And, you know, trying to pulling that heat away from that hot light, which is going to have you, it's going to be pretty hot, you know, 78 to about 82. You want to keep it kind of down. But then at night, once it cools off and you turn the lights off, that temperature drops. And that up and down, that's where that mold is in.
Situation. Gotcha.
Yeah. The condensation, and then, you know, so staying preventative mode, man, with sprays, definitely with, you know what I mean, silica, keeping it kid healthy and strong, and boom, you know what I'm saying, it's easy to do, because once you get that powdery mildew, you gonna have to throw everything away. You gonna have to clean that whole thing and wash it down. So just be careful, especially in hot places where we had nothing. So I can just tell you, watch out. So just definitely, that's just a bad batch. Might as well just. And it happened to the best of us. There ain't no nothing to be ashamed of, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna even front. Shit, my first couple of grows was, they were horrible. You know what I'm saying? I smoked it anyway, but it was terrible. But you know what I'm saying? You learn, and I was tasting it, so I was like, man, this is not good. Where did I do this? Boom, boom, boom. And I wasn't really one to write down. You gotta start writing down and documenting your day and your stuff to, so I can remember, because I was like, new music out there. Remember, people, Meek Minds, MINDMEEK, MeekMinds.com. If you need any, your website needs to be, tell them what it needs to do and y'all can do it. What is it?
Yeah, website, web design, web building, right. Web management, maintenance, any type of graphics, artwork, pictures, files, music being played on your website. MeekMind.com, like you said again, MEEKMIND.com.
Yes, sir. That's what it's all about. Sure. So we're gonna get into you got a pick?
What?
Music song.
No.
So we'll be right back. We'll hit y'all back in a minute. Peace.
Voila. Voila. Yeah. I'm only coming out to play. Nothing more that I hate in this life. The wrong impression. I only have one to make. You can open your palm, waiting to catch a break. The cards will fall where they may. And what about me? I believe in fate. Huh. They wanna know where I'll be in 5. Huh. But what about today? What about tonight? Only one at a time. So precious. It's yours, it's mine, only one at a time. My life, my life, yeah. Am I wrong to assume if she can't dance, then she can't ooh, yeah. Am I wrong to say if she can't dance, then she can't ooh? Hey, I never wanna waste your time. My life, so precious, is yours, is mine. And look at the time, my God, so precious, is yours, is mine. Only one at a time. So precious, is yours, is mine. Only one at a time.
That right there would get the dance floor jumping. I love that song right there. Get a win of time. See something, you know. How do they do it? Like, we got one of them things, say, on air that'll bright up.
Oh, yeah.
One of them lights.
Recording studio.
Like, I used to see that. That, you know what, that's really, as I wanted to always do radio after I used to see, what was my jam? That was my show. Time and time, up and down the dial. Baby, my name wasn't meant to be. but maybe we can be once in a while. I'm at WKRP in Cincinnati. You remember that shit?
No. I don't.
You don't remember that show at all?
Nah, what's the name of the show?
WKRP in Cincinnati. That's okay. You know what's Lonnie Anderson? Check it out. I wonder why that kid Lonnie Anderson. She used to be married to what's his name, motherfucker? Burt Reynolds. And so she was like she's Lonnie Anderson. And then you got what's her name, Paula. What's the one Paula was married? She didn't do nothing. She just was on Baywatch running. Did you ever watch that?
Yeah, Paula Patton.
Paula Patton? Boy, no, not.
Paula Abdul?
Nah, I don't know if her name is Paula. Anderson. I'm tripping, man. What did I say? Pamela. All right, I said Paula, Pamela. Paula, Pamela.
About 2 minutes to introduce.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right, we're finna go ahead, man. This is Japan and the cannabis culture, the history of cannabis in Japan. We will see you all next week. Enjoy this information and peace.
Today, Japan has some of the strictest anti-cannabis laws in the world. Punishment for possession is a maximum 5 years behind bars, and illicit growers face 7 year sentences. Annually, around 2,000 people fall foul of these laws, their names splashed on the nightly news and their careers ruined forever. The same prohibition that dishes out these punishments also bans research into medical marijuana, forcing Japanese scientists overseas to conduct their studies. For decades, these laws have stood unchallenged. But now increasing numbers of Japanese people are speaking out against prohibition, and at the heart of their campaign is an attempt to teach the public about Japan's long-forgotten history of cannabis. Most Japanese people see cannabis as a subculture of Japan, but they're wrong. For thousands of years, cannabis has been at the very heart of Japanese culture, explains Takayasu Junishi, one of the country's leading experts. According to Takayasu, the earliest traces of cannabis in Japan are seeds and woven fibers discovered in the west of the country dating back to the Jomon period, 10,000 BC 300 BC. Archaeologists suggest that cannabis fibers were used for clothes, as well as for bowstrings and fishing lines. These plants were likely cannabis sativa, prized for its strong fibers, a thesis supported by a Japanese prehistoric cave painting which appears to show a tall spindly plant with cannabis's telltale leaves. Cannabis was the most important substance for prehistoric people in Japan. But today many Japanese people have a very negative image of the plant, says Takayasu. In order to put Japanese people back in touch with their cannabis roots, in 2001 Takayasu founded Tema Hakubatsukan, the Cannabis Museum, the only museum in Japan dedicated to the much maligned weed. 2. The museum is located in a log cabin 100 miles from Tokyo in Tochigi Prefecture, an area long associated with Japanese cannabis farming. The prefecture borders the Tohoku region, which was devastated by the March 11, 2011 earthquake. But being inland from the tsunami and shielded by mountains from radioactive fallout, it largely escaped the effects of the disaster. 002 Wrist Greet, JPG, Link. Takayasu Junishi, curator of Tema Hakubatsukan, Japan's only cannabis museum. Tonight, the museum is packed with testimony to Japan's proud cannabis heritage. There are 17th century woodblock prints of women spinning fibers and photos of farmers cutting plants. In one corner sits a working loom where Takayasu demonstrates the art of weaving. He points to a bale of cannabis cloth, warm in winter, cool in summer. It's perfectly suited to Japan's extreme climate. Until the middle of the 20th century, Japanese cannabis farming used to be a year-round cycle, explains Takayasu. The seeds were planted in spring, then harvested in the summer. Following this, the stalks were dried, then soaked and turned into fiber. Throughout the winter, these were then woven into cloth and made into clothes ready to wear for the next planting season. Playing such a key role in agriculture, cannabis often appeared in popular culture. It is mentioned in the 8th century. Manayoshu. Japan's oldest collection of poems and features in many haiku and tonka poems. Ninjas purportedly used cannabis in their training, leaping daily over the fast-growing plants to hone their acrobatic skills. According to Takayasu, cannabis was so renowned for growing tall and strong that there was a Japanese proverb related to positive peer pressure which stated that even gnarly weeds would straighten if grown among cannabis plants. In a similar way, school songs in cannabis-growing communities often exhorted pupils to grow as straight and tall as cannabis plants. Due to these perceived qualities, a fabric design called asanoha, based upon interlocking cannabis leaves, became popular in the 18th century. The design was a favorite choice for children's clothes and also became fashionable among merchants hoping for a boom in their economic fortunes. Accompanying these material uses, cannabis also bore spiritual significance in Shintoism, Japan's indigenous religion, which venerates natural harmony and notions of purity. Cannabis was revered for its cleansing abilities, so Shinto priests used to wave bundles of leaves to exorcise evil spirits. Likewise, to signify their purity, brides wore veils made from cannabis on their wedding days. Today, the nation's most sacred shrine, Aizjingu, in Mie Prefecture, continues to have 5 annual ceremonies called Tama, dedicated to the nation's sun goddess. However, many modern visitors fail to connect the names of these rituals with the drug so demonized by their politicians and police. 3.003 Rustgreet, JPG. Link. A woodblock print from the 17th century shows women preparing the fibers from early 20th century American historian George Footmore also recorded how Japanese travelers used to present small offerings of cannabis leaves at roadside shrines to ensure safe journeys. Families, too, burn bunches of cannabis in their doorways to welcome back the spirits of the dead during the summer. Obon Festival. Given this plethora of evidence that cannabis was essential in so many aspects of Japanese life, one question remains in doubt: was it smoked? Takayasu isn't sure, and nor are many other experts. Historical archives make no mention of cannabis smoking in Japan, but these records tend to focus primarily on the lifestyles of the elite and ignore the habits of the majority of the population. For hundreds of years, Japanese society used to be stratified into a strict class system. Within this hierarchy, rice, and the sake, wine brewed from it, was controlled by the rich, so cannabis may well have been the drug of choice for the masses. Equally as important as whether cannabis was smoked is the question of could it have been? The answer to that is a clear yes. According to a 1973 survey published by the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime, THC levels of indigenous Japanese cannabis plants from Tochigi measured almost 4%. In comparison, one study conducted by the University of Mississippi's Marijuana Potency Monitoring Project found average THC levels in marijuana seized by U.S. authorities in the 1970s at a much lower 1.5%. 4. Until the early 20th century, cannabis-based cures were available from Japanese drugstores. long an ingredient in traditional Chinese medicine. They were taken to relieve muscle aches, pain and insomnia. Meanwhile, the Tohoku region was renowned for wild Wiriri Kanako, laughing mushrooms. In a country in love with its fungi, think shiitake, kama, maitake, and $1,000 matsutake. The sale of a range of psychedelic mushrooms was legal until 2002, when they were prohibited to improve the country's international image prior to the Japan-South Korea World Cup. 5. The prohibition against the Japanese cannabis industry also has a foreign origin. According to Takuyasu, the 1940s started well for cannabis farmers as the nation's military leaders, like those in the U.S., urged farmers to plant cannabis to help win the Asia-Pacific War. The Imperial Navy needed it for ropes and the Air Force for parachute cords. The military categorized cannabis as a war material and they created patriotic war slogans about it. There was even a saying that without cannabis, the war couldn't be waged, says Takuyasu. However, after Japan's surrender in 1945, U.S. authorities occupied the country and they introduced American attitudes towards cannabis, having effectively prohibited its cultivation in the States in 1937. Washington now sought to ban it in Japan. With the nation still under U.S. control, it passed the 1948 Cannabis Control Act. The law criminalized possession and unlicensed cultivation, and more than 60 years later, it remains at the core of Japan's current anti-cannabis policy. At the time, the U.S. authorities appear to have passed off the act as an altruistic desire to protect Japanese people from the evils of drugs. But critics point out that occupation authorities allowed the sale of over-the-counter amphetamines to continue until 1951. Instead, several Japanese experts contend that the ban was instigated by U.S. petrochemical lobbyists who wanted to overturn the Japanese cannabis fiber industry and open the market to American-made artificial materials, including nylon. 00 Forest Greed, JPG. Link. Workers harvest cannabis at a licensed farm in Tochigi Prefecture. Takayasu Chonishi. Takayasu sees the ban in a different light, situating it within the wider context of U.S. attempts to reduce the power of Japanese militarists who had dragged Asia into war. In the same way the U.S. authorities discouraged martial arts such as kendo and judo, the 1948 Cannabis Control Act was a way to undermine militarism in Japan. The wartime cannabis industry had been so dominated by the military that the new law was designed to strip away its power. Regardless of the true reasons, the impact of the 1948 Cannabis Control Act was devastating. From a peak of more than 25,000 cannabis farms in 1948, the numbers quickly plummeted, forcing farmers out of business and driving the knowledge of cannabis cultivation to the brink of extinction. Today there are fewer than 60 licensed cannabis farms in Japan, all required to grow strains of cannabis containing minimal levels of THC, and only one survivor versed in the full cannabis cycle of Citrulline, an 84-year-old woman. Simultaneously, a sustained propaganda campaign has cleaved the Japanese public from their cannabis cultural roots, brainwashing them into perceiving marijuana as a poison on a par with heroin or crack cocaine. These campaigns might have stamped out all traces of Japan's millennia-long history were it not for one factor: the resilience of the cannabis plants themselves. Every summer, millions of these bushes, the feral offspring of cannabis legally cultivated before 1948, pop up in the hills and plains of rural Japan. In 2006, 300 plants even sprouted in the grounds of a Bashiri prison in Hokkaido, much to the embarrassment of the powers that be. 6. Every year, the Japanese police wage well-publicized eradication campaigns against these plants. On average, They discover and destroy between 1 and 2 million of them. But like so many other aspects of the drug war, theirs is a losing battle, and the next year, the plants grow back in larger numbers than ever. Due to the taboo surrounding discussions of cannabis, many people had been reluctant to condemn these police campaigns. But now critics are beginning to attack both the waste of public resources and the needless destruction of such versatile plants. Nageyoshi Hideo, author of the 2009 book Tame a Nyuman, An Introduction to Cannabis, argues for the wild cannabis plants to be systematically harvested and put to use as medicines, biomass energy, and in the construction industries. Funa Yukio, another advocate and author of Akuhau, Tame a Torishimaru Hano Shinjitsu, Bad Law, The Truth Behind the Cannabis Control Act, 2012, calls cannabis a golden egg for Japan. In a detailed breakdown of the potential economic benefits of legalization, he factors in savings from reduced policing and incarceration, concluding the country could reap as much as $300 billion in the long term. In a nation facing unprecedented economic problems, and at a time when marijuana legalization is advancing in the United States and other countries, it appears these arguments are striking a chord. Recently, Japan slipped behind China as the world's third economic power, and the country owes more than $10 trillion in debt, double its GDP. These problems contribute to the human toll of an estimated 6.5 million alcoholics and a suicide rate that hovers at around 30,000 a year. The legalization of cannabis could solve some of these problems. By luring young entrepreneurs back to the land, it could counter agricultural decline, particularly in post-earthquake Tohoku. It might improve the quality of care for thousands of cancer patients and halt the brain drain of scientists forced overseas to research medical cannabis. Legalization would also prevent the annual arrests of 2,000 Japanese people, many in their 20s and 30s, whose lives are destroyed by their nation's illogical and ahistorical laws. In years to come, Tame a Hokubutsukan might be seen as a true beachhead in this struggle. People need to learn the truth about the history of cannabis in Japan, says Takayasu. The more we learn about the past, the more hints we might be able to get about how to live better in the future. Cannabis can offer Japan a beacon of hope.